Cavs need a three. Sexton works on Irving, trying to get loose. He'll fire. Knocks it down. Ground. Here goes Okoro to the bucket, and oh my, Okoro throws it down. 10 seconds to go. Here comes Colin Sexton. Sexton chased by Hill, off to Stevens. Oh my! 45 ticks to go. That shot is blocked by Nance.
Get that big stuff out of here.
Prince knocks down that Harden pass. Garland's there. Garland upstairs for Allen. Oh, look out!
There you go. That's called team ball right there.
Hey, Chris Manning here from Locked On Cavs. Coming up on today's show, we're going to talk about team needs for the Cleveland Cavaliers. Now that we know what pick they have, we're going to talk about the possible needs this team has. You're also going to hear a clip from a Chad Ford interview with Brian Shaw, who coached the G League Ignite team in the bubble this past year, and specifically a big chunk of it is on Jalen Green, who he was raving about, and obviously is someone that I think the Cavs may take or have interest in. Is one of the, I think, the main guys we'll talk about a lot on the show over the next month. I think that this will be very informative for you. It's a very good interview, and if you aren't already, please go check out the Chad Ford's NBA Big Board podcast wherever you're listening to Locked On Cavs right now. Today's episode is also brought to you by our friends at Michelob Ultra. At only 2.6 carbs and 95 calories, it's only worth it if you enjoy it. And remember, enjoyment isn't the end game, it's the whole game. Evan, we made it to the end of the week.
We're
here. We did a Ben Simmons episode. The Cavs are picking third in the draft.
You cut off all eight fingers and both thumbs.
Yeah, I'm just knuckling now.
I'm in witness protection. It's been an eventful week.
So we haven't touched on this in a while, but let's think about team needs and think about the Cavs and sort of what they need. When you're considering what the Cavs actually need as of right now, what are some of the things that come to your mind?
Perimeter depth, shot creators, playmakers, just stuff like that. I think the Cavs have a good cachet of defenders right now, at least that will possibly be here long term, in Larry Nance, Isaac Okoro, Jared Allen. You have a shot creator in Colin Sexton. You do have a playmaker and initiator in Darius Garland. But you can always add more. That's never a bad thing to have. That's one thing I've noticed in these playoffs, at least, is you need guards that can create their own shot, or just wing players in general that can create their own shot. And then wing depth is always a need in today's modern NBA, because I know they have Okoro. Jetty's here for at least now. He could be traded between now and the draft, because Boston made that evident that you can trade when your season's over. So that could change as well, but it's in the modern NBA, you need wing depth, and I think you kind of know who I'm alluding to here, but at the same time, the Cavs also can't be too particular when it comes to the draft. Like I said, they need to draft best player available every time, then you figure it out from there.
I think the biggest thing that I would say that is a team, I think it's still overall like shot creation for others and just general shot creation. Like, I just think that is like, this is obviously the most paramount skill in the league in a lot of ways. And whether that's like creating for others in space, whether that's creating for others in half court sets, whether it's being able to get your own shot off. And I think being a bigger wing that can do it, I think that is clearly just like the team need. Even if it's like a 6'4", 6'5" guy, like that would be such a different bit for this, right? Like, that is just a thing that I think the Cavs need. It's just like very clearly like a roster. There's like no one on the roster that is above 6'1" that has like perimeter skills, really, right? Like, Larry has like a dabbling of playmaking and hasn't really bared out to mean, I think, as much as maybe we hyped it up to be, or at least I did. You know, Kevin, whatever Kevin is at this point, like, you know, we'll kind of see what's going to go on with him. But like, Jared Allen doesn't really offer you a lot of creation, and if he's your starting center going forward, that's like a thing you're just not really going to get for him. Like, the engine of the playmaking for these last couple years has really had to be Sexton and then Garland, and like, whether like those guys are part of the long-term plan or not, like, you need as many, you just need more of it, and you need bigger versions of it. I think it's just clearly to me like a very clear like flaw in this roster.
It really is. It's a huge flaw, honestly, and it's become evident when you watch a lot of these playoff teams too, that like what the Cavs are lacking right now and what they need to address is few and far between. Like, I know a lot of fans are probably excited to see the Cavs back in the playoffs, but I just don't think it's going to happen next year, maybe the play-in. I mean, barring things unforeseen, the Cavs could make a huge swing for the fence trade too. But I don't see that happening either. But Chris, do you think this is at least what you and I have discussed? Because I think we're talking about the same thing here. We really are. Do you think that's something they can address in the draft or more so in free agency with their mid-level exception and with possibly vetmin deals or a trade or something like that?
I think it depends on what you're looking for. If you're looking for like a short-term fix to patch together like enough stuff, I think then like maybe you can find other stuff. But I think the long-term answer is like the draft has to be the place you do it. Like, I don't think a trade is out there that is going to get you the type of player I think you kind of need on this roster. The draft is the way to get that. Like, it is sort of a Jalen Green. I think people will argue for Suggs. I think, like, Cade would have obviously been this. Like, I think that's the kind of caliber of player you're really looking. And, like, everyone that I have, like, sort of been talking to about, like, the Cavs, like, just some draft folks, like, you know, from a couple different places, just talking through them with them, like writers, I should specifically, not team people. Like, we were kind of working through the cap stuff, and basically, I think it was like, okay, if you get Green, like this could really just kind of give you something that you sort of need to kind of shape the offense in a more modern way. And like, they've tried to get guys that sort of fit this. Like, I mean, I think Jet, the hope that I think the hope and my hope for Jetty was sort of that he's going to have at least more secondary playmaking. He showed it internationally, and he's just never been good at it in the NBA for whatever reason. You know, I mean, like, we'll see. They tried to give Okoro some of that last year, and, like, Okoro had actually, for relative to his usage rate, like, a pretty good above-average assist-usage ratio last year as a rookie, which, considering how raw he is in that end, like, that's not a bad thing at all, but, like, you know, bad turnover percentage. Like, mm-hmm. Evan, I want to tell you, here's a fun stat that kind of plays into this. I think that is very telling to me. So, can you name the Cavs players? There are five of them that had an assist percentage in the 51st percentile or above. That had a turnover percentage, excuse me, in the 51st percentile or above, meaning they're not turning the ball over. There are five, and some of them are a little weird, and there's a couple like big ones, but like there's a couple randos.
Well, this is actually going to be tough because the Cavs did have a lot of roster turnover. They had a lot of injuries, so you saw a lot of G League guys getting minutes. Is Matthew Dellavedova one of them?
Matthew Dellavedova had a turnover ratio in the 99th percentile, meaning like he turned the ball over at a very low level among combo guards, according to Clean of the Glass. That's one.
Okay. Is Darius Garland one of them? Just going to go for the easy ones.
No, Darius Garland was in the bottom fourth of point guards in assist and turnover percentage.
Okay, well, I'm 1-1. Isaiah Hartenstein, just from those weird passing days he had.
No, Isaiah Hartenstein has a turnover percentage in the bottom 10% of bigs.
Oh my god, this is going to be a crappy game.
I'll give you two more guesses.
Is Quinn Cook or Yogi Ferrell? Is Quinn Cook and Yogi Ferrell on the list?
No.
Or are Quinn Cook and Yogi Ferrell? Okay, so no. Just cross those two off.
One more guess, and then I'm just going to give you the name. No, Colin Sexton is at 44%. And had a good risk. We'll talk about him and the player thing because there's a lot of the numbers are very interesting there. But here are the five players that had technically 50%. Honorable mention in Damian Dotson, who's at 49% turnover among combo guards. Kevin Love, 51% among bigs, 51st percentile in among bigs in turnover percentage. That's a little above average. Jetty Osman among forwards, 52nd percentile. Broderick Thomas among wings in the 56th percentile. Jeff Nominat, you're welcome. And then Dean Wade in the 84th percentile of forwards in turnover percentage.
Wow. At least then got you one. Did have... I feel like well, it did. So the Delly one was like my safest bet because he seldom played for the Cavs. When he did, he looked okay in terms of moving the rock.
Right, and then so you did have guys with like good assist percentages. Like Darius was above... you know, had the highest assist percentage on the team, 29.8%. Colin was among combo guards, which he's calculated as on Cleaning the Glass, 21.8%. And then you had guys like Kevin Love and Hartenstein that had, like, very good assist percentages due to their position. But, like, you just don't have, like, overwhelming playmaking on this team. And I think that's just, like, a real hindrance. I think, like, there are ways you can scheme that up and fix it for regular season stuff. I think that's obviously, like, a more easy, obvious fix. But, like, the talent that you have is not really offering you that in a way I think you'd optimally like.
No, No, I agree. I think a lot of that does fall on the shoulders of JB, and his offense is very vanilla, and that's like one of our curmudgeons and complaints when it comes to JB's coaching. Is I know Justin Roan likes to cite the fact that Houston and Memphis were like took a ton of threes, and the Cavs don't, though. And I think the Cavs need a little bit more of a stronger offensive identity, because like you said, also a few times now, it's not just one coach who does everything. There's a team and it's a coaching staff for a reason. So yeah, that'd be interesting to see. I don't know. I think the Cavs, if they can, I think they could get an all-star caliber player with three, and maybe they can build their identity really around them. But at the same time, you need to make the offense easier for them and easy for the rest of the roster as well. And I really do think a top priority is bringing in a coach who can handle that. If Lloyd Pierce isn't the answer, maybe Vanderpool is, because he isn't going to get an opportunity in Portland, which is still weird to me. But he has experience coaching CJ and Colin. CJ and Dame. Huge slip there. And if that's the case, he has experience coaching smaller guards. I know he's more of a defensive-minded coach, but I think he can provide both offensive and defensive input for a team that is hell-bent and determined to start two smaller guards.
Yeah. Evan, any other like minor playmaking notes you want to say before we go into a break here?
I'm still going to be a big proponent of Isaac Okoro. Man, I'm really slipping up my words today. Isaac Okoro being like a backup point for the Cavs, or just playing a little bit of like some point forward situations, because that was a fun, interesting wrinkle in development. And when I was talking about players that, or like things the Cavs need, Jalen Green covers a lot of that, but a lot of those things were also covered by Kevin Porter Jr. as well. And that's always going to be kind of a what if, is what if the Cavs and KPJ were able to make things work? Because KPJ answered a lot of problems that the Cavs had last year, I think. I know he'd be a bench scorer, but he'd be really helpful in so many ways off the bench for Cleveland.
Yeah, that's right. All right, Evan, let's take a break. I think you're going to tell everyone about our first sponsor today.
You are correct. It is BetOnline. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Baseball season is in full swing, and you can track all the action at BetOnline. As an aside, did you see the All-Star jerseys?
Horrendous.
They're awful. Get all the latest news, odds, and info for all your sporting needs, including MLB, NBA, NHL, and all your UFC, MMA action. Before the next pitch, head over to BetOnline on your laptop or mobile device and check out all the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, and contest information. Do not sit on the sidelines anymore, as this is your chance to get into the game as teams prep for their runs to the playoffs or a championship. Head to their website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit, but only if you use the promo code LOCKEDON. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts and the exclusive betting partner of the Locked On Podcast Network. Today on the road to the finals, our NBA playoffs coverage is brought to you by Michelob Ultra. It's only worth it if you enjoy it, and at 2.6 carbs and 95 calories, we can all enjoy the games a little bit more this season.
All right, we're back. Chris Manning, Evan Damrell, just two dudes on the internet.
What's up?
Spending too much time thinking about dumb shit. So
how's Joker, baby Joker Yoda?
Don't want to talk about it.
Is he back on the shelf? No one puts baby in a corner.
Yeah, he's... okay, anyway. Evan, my next need is, I think, is kind of a meta one, but it's continued emphasis on development. I think the Cavs try to short-circuit, like, any sort of efforts. I think they're in a really big position. They're in a position where, like, they can't just, like, gun for the 10th seed next year.
Nah.
And then what they need to do is like really make a point of it to they really need to make a point of it to continue to develop stuff. So even like if they sign let's just say they sign Doug McDermott this offseason. Mm-hmm. Right? Like let's say that's a mid-level exception signing. I think like whether it's Dylan Windler or someone else, like I think you have to try to keep developing.
Oh yeah,
like future version of that. And there's teams that give up on that stuff, and I think even with guys that you think are already very good, like I think Jared Allen's a really good example. You got to continue to develop Jared Allen. I'm the Cavs coaches, I'm watching what DeAndre Ayton has done in these playoffs, and like I know we talked about Gobert and stuff like that as like examples of center play, But I really think, like, you got to be like, hey, look, Jarrett, like, we understand, like, there's other stuff you're good at. You know, you've probably not been asked to do some of this, but we really need to get you a couple moves in the post because, like, he doesn't really have any game in the post right now. Like, he needs mm-hmm. a couple moves in the post that, like, if teams put a small guard on him, you know, in a play-in game or in a close game late in a game, and you want to still make him matter and they get the most out of him, whatever you're going to ultimately pay him, I think, mm-hmm. like, that's just got to be a thing. You got to continue to find ways to get guys to develop in the ways you're going to, even though if you're trying to achieve more specific goals in terms of, like, making the play-in or whatever, I think development and continued development is going to be really, really key.
No, I agree too. There has to be a lot of internal growth, and we talked about this with Justin Rowan in our Locked On Cavs Chase Down Crossover Marathon. The Cavs need to crawl before they walk, and they need to walk before they run. And running, obviously, is gunning for the playoffs. The Cavs need to figure out a lot of things this offseason, and they need to, like Kobe alluded to, whomever they pick, whether it is Evan Mobley or Jalen Green, because I'm not sure what Houston will actually do. It's, like, mixed reporting on both ends, and I don't really have any connections with the Rockets. So, either way, Kobe more or less alluded to the fact that, like, the rotations will be kind of shaped by this player because they truly believe that they're all stars in this draft and that they can shape their roster around this going forward. And if it's Jalen Green, you got to break up the backcourt probably too, and then probably start, like, Garland, Green, Okoro, Love, and Allen. And then you try to move Love, maybe you try to move Sexton, and then you try to bring in more wing players or wing depth somehow, some way. I don't know who's available or not, but then you have to find a veteran who wants to be here too, because you can't really turn the keys of this roster over to a bunch of young guys because they're inexperienced and raw. And then,
or if it's not the young guy that is, like, the young guy, you're gonna, like,
Cunningham, who raised the floor.
Well, or if it's like Luka, like the best example of recent memory is Luka Doncic.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and this year's example is going to be Cade Cunningham, because I firmly believe Detroit will be in the playoff mix and play-in mix next year because they have Cade. Because I think Cade really meshes a lot of things together for a lot of, especially the teams in the top four. But, yeah, I'm just intrigued to see what the Cavs do, but they need to take baby steps here. And I know, like, it's easy to get caught up in the moment and get excited. The Cavs got a top three pick. This is a four-player draft, and the top three is really, like, the cream of the crop, with Jalen Suggs being the fourth best player in this draft, in my opinion. You got to figure out what you have here. I know it's easy to get excited and get caught up in the hype in the moment, but once you figure out what you have and you start making the hard decisions, whether it's extending Allen or not, or extending Sexton or not, or flipping some of these pieces, because, like Brian Windhorst said, and I agree, we should not start saying core four, because no one in this roster is truly safe. Anyone is available for the right price, and Kobe Altman is probably going to be gunning to save his job this season too, and put together a competent roster that can compete for the playoffs, or at least remain competitive in some of the dire stretches of the season as well, because the Cavs looked like doo-doo feces at some points last year, and I don't think they want to repeat that, and especially if he has the pressure of team chairman Dan Gilbert breathing down his neck too. Kobe's going to try and do what he takes to save his job, probably help JB as well, because I think those two were in tandem together, so if, like, Kobe goes, JB goes. There's a lot of variables outside of this too, and I just think the Cavs need to take baby steps first and not say, like, okay, we took Evan Mobley or Jalen Green because Cade Cunningham will not be available at three. We're going for the playoffs. And again, I think it's funny, Kobe kind of walked back the franchise's sentiment, even though, like, their better young player and coach have said, like, they're trying to compete for the playoffs, and a few other players said they're trying to compete for the playoffs, when he said it was never about making the playoffs last season. But I can understand getting excited about it, and I know Justin Rowan came on here and tried to make a compelling argument that the Cavs will be a playoff or a play-in team next year. But like I said, let's figure out this offseason, figure out the summer, get through summer league, get through training camp, and then you just slowly start building momentum and see what you have, because this could fall apart in spectacular fashion too.
Yeah. Speaking of development, I think shooting is paramount.
Oh, absolutely. Like, if Jared Allen could add a little bit of a shot to his game, that'd be huge for them. Like, I know he flirted with taking threes in Cleveland, and he, he never really took those in Brooklyn either. So maybe if he can add a little bit of like just some shooting to his repertoire, I also like him in the short role too. But short shooting is going to be huge for this Cavs team. They need to be a bit more modern with their offensive production.
The Cavs don't have a lot of guys that are taking threes that are sort of like massive parts of their diets that are sort of like, you know, big rotation pieces. If you're looking at the roster last year, so Kevin Love, 61% of Kevin Love shots came as three-pointers. That's like by far the biggest chunk of any like normal
kind
of
to us. We said the Cavs' three-point attempts would go up organically once Love returned, so pat yourself on the back, Chris.
It's almost like I'm not a dumbass. Larry Nance, to his credit, took 39% of his shots from three last year. That is in the 75th percentile of big, so that's like a pretty good chunk, and I think that's pushing Larry to his maximum comfort. Where it gets really dicey is like, okay, so Darius Garland, 32% of his shots. That's the 39th percentile among point guards. Colin Sexton, 22% of his shots are three-pointers. Only 6%. That's only in the 6th percentile of combo guards.
And like, shout out to Jetty Osman. He shot 320.
Jetty Osman, Jetty, the Cavs. The Cavs need to be the Utah Jazz Osman. What a flex, but like I think like you know some of it is I think scheme. I don't think JB is like anti threes. I think he is a little more conservative. Like there's a middle ground in that discourse there, but I do think like I think replacing some pieces and like kind of emphasizing that more is just a way to go forward. And some of that is like, okay, like this is why you can't play like three big lineups. Like I'm sorry, like Nance plus Allen and another big is just not going to be something I want to use next year. Some of that is like, look, Isaac Okoro, you know, took 201 threes last year out of 589 attempts. Like, he's not shooting a lot, and he's, like, not taking a lot of threes relative to his vision. The bottom 20% of wings last year, right? So, like, you're in a position with these guys where you just have a lot of guys that haven't figured it out or are reluctant or whatever, and, like, you know, I think Garland is the one where I look at him like, okay, I want him to dial this up to another level and see where it goes. And Colin, like, frankly, like, if there's a knock on Colin as a scorer, like, I do think it is like
his hesitancy to take threes,
because he will go through stretches where he just doesn't really want to take them. And I can understand at times, like, I'm not like an anti mid-range person if you're someone who's good at it. And Colin has like a very strong mid-range game, you know, at least like, in terms of a shooting perspective. But like, so he has to ramp up the 3-point volume, I think.
He's a strong 3-point shooter, and only 24% of his shots last year were threes. Like, and yeah, then you look at Darius Garland's shot profile, stall for me a little bit here.
Well, it's like,
Darius only took 802 shots last year.
Darius isn't like a very super willing shooter, to be quite honest with you,
No, he's not. Darius took 33 of Darius's shots. 33.2% of Darius' shot attempts were three-pointers last year. So there's a little something there. He's hitting them from Nashville at points.
I think, like, if you add the right two pieces to the rotation, like, and you go into next year and, like, you have McDermott or, like, some player like that, and then Jalen Green, like,
scheme
that.
Scheme, too.
But I think I think it's both. Like, I do think Garland is, like, a little hesitant. I think Sexton gets very hesitant to shoot a bunch of threes. Like, I think, like, you know, Okoro just doesn't have that in his bag fully yet, right? Like, these are just, like, parts of these players, but it is also scheme. Like, JB is, like, again, like, I don't think JB's, like, don't take threes, but I do think JB is a more conservative coach in that regard. Like, I don't think he's ever going to want to be Quinn Snyder and have his team taking that many threes. It doesn't strike me as a thing that JB's intrigued by.
No, it's not. Sorry, I'm making a face. Open twitter.com and see Sindarius Thornwell said,
my guy, my guy Sindarius.
He said, wish Doc let me hoop like Lou let man.
Oh, I extremely love Sindarius. Like, honestly, like, maybe the most honest interview we've ever had. I think I've talked about it on the show, but I interviewed him on the phone when he was with the Cavs for a little bit, and he was, like, just, like, talking about, like, the jerseys, and he was, like, buying a bag of chips, and he was, like, asking what kind of chips
shit about him on the podcast, weren't you? And then he got word of it.
No, somebody
said you're talking shit.
Someone said, I said something about him, and, like, his brother or something, like, said something, and then we talked about it, but, like, him and I had, like, a conversation about, like, the discourse.
Yeah.
Like, it was, like, it was fine. Like, whatever. Like, I, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I wish he would have stuck with Cleveland. Remember, he posted his preseason stats. And I also saw Dave Zavak mentioning the Steelers cutting Dave DeCastro, and he's just sipping a Miller High Life. in his Odell Beckham jersey. I'm just like, good for you, Dave. Good for you.
Yeah. Evan, any final needs you want to shout out? Because we're going to go into break, pay a bill, and then the Chad Ford interview with Brian Shaw will close out the show in the week here on Locked On Cavs.
No, I'll have something special to announce next Tuesday for our listeners, so pay attention to my Twitter feed. That's where I'll be making the formal announcement. But I just hope everyone has a good weekend. Stay safe. It's supposed to rain Friday and Saturday, so stay dry. And then Sunday, enjoy the weather because it's supposed to storm all next week. So, yeah, we'll see you Monday.
Yeah, have a good weekend, everyone. And to pay a bill to get out of here, I want to tell you about our friends at Built Bar. Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar on the market. And come on, you know this by now if you've been listening to this podcast or any other Locked On podcast. Built Bar is great. They have a bunch of great flavors: mint brownie, coconut, coconut almond, cherry, raspberry, mint brownie, etc., etc. There's something for everyone, so go try them. If you don't know what to get a mixed box, get two each of the 9 flavors, and have a good time with it. 17 grams of protein, only 130 calories, 4 grams of sugar, and just 4 grams of net carbs. Right now, go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKED15. Yes, that is LOCKED15. You'll get 15% off your first order. Again, use promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at BuiltBar.com. One last plug before we go into the interview with Brian. If you want, or the Chad Ford interview with Brian, I should say, because we didn't get to do this interview. You can. I tweeted it. I'll put it in the show notes. But I did an appearance because we're an Odyssey podcast, and Locked On Today is an Odyssey podcast. I was on 92.3, which is an Odyssey radio station, with Chico and Chico After Dark on Wednesday. I talked to Kevin Love, the draft pick, a whole bunch of other stuff. It was a lot of fun. Really cool to be on that station. We obviously had Ken Carman on the show, but getting on there was very cool to talk to Chico and talk about the Cavs on that station. And thanks to them for having me on. And go check that out. And if you want to hear me or Evan on there, let them know. Like, we've both been on there different times in the past. You know, Evan recently, me recently. Back when Jake Chapman was there, I was on some Sundays. But if you want to hear us more on there, let them know, and maybe we can. You'll hear our if you want even more of our takes. Let them know. But download the Odyssey app if you want to check that out. All right. Here's the Chad Ford interview with G League Ignite coach Brian Shaw.
And we're back talking G League with G League Ignite head coach Brian Shaw. You can read more scouting reports on these G League players: Jalen Green, Jonathan Kuminga, Dyson Nix, Isaiah Todd, over on my new website, www.nbabigboard.com. Find tons of scouting reports there, or Big Board 4.0, and this newest article, Scouting These G League Prospects. This is the last week that everything's going to be free. Make sure you sign up, subscribe. The cost of subscription is $7 a month, $70 a year. I really think it's going to be worth your money. We got a mock draft coming next week. Go over to www.nbabigboard.com to check out this article. All of our podcasts are there, and we'll email you every article right when we publish it directly into your inbox. We've talked a little bit about the G League experience. We're going to dive now into some scouting reports. Let's start with Jalen Green. Jalen was your leading scorer on this team this year, is in the mix for the number one pick in this draft. I have him number 4 right now on my big board, but it's very, very tight. At the top right now, there's 5 really awesome prospects for this year's number one pick in the draft. Coach, from your perspective, tell us what Jalen Green does that makes him worthy of being a potential number one pick in the draft.
Well, I think first and foremost, just his attitude and approach towards the game. You know, he's been the number one ranked player in his class, I guess, the last couple of years. And so he's always been a target. And he has, he doesn't, as he says, I'm not backing down from any fades. And that's a quote from how he terms how his opponents come after him. And I mean, his work ethic, you know, I've been with, you know, Kobe when he was young, and Brandon Ingram when we drafted him when I was with the Lakers, you know, and some very good young players, Paul George, when he was a young player in Indiana. And there's just a certain it factor that a lot of those guys had that I saw when they were Jalen's age. And he has that. And the, you know, when you couple that with the fact that he's willing to put in the work, you know, so he has that work ethic, and he wants to be the best, you know, competes every day in practice in every drill, from just not wanting to lose a sprint to a shooting contest, you know, what have you. And then when you put all that together and you actually get to compete against somebody different out there on the floor, he has a knack to just be able to figure things out. So, you know, there were games where, you know, he would only have 4 points in the first half because teams were, you know, concentrating on shutting him down. He would come into the locker room at halftime, ask questions. What do you see, coach? How are they playing me? What do I need to do? And you tell him, and then he goes out there and figures out a way to get it done. And so, you know, for him to lead us in scoring, and his athleticism is effortless. His shot selection improved, which, you know, he shot a good percentage from three as well as from the field. And I think that was a big question mark that people had on him, you know, but like I said, his shot selection improved, which increased his shooting percentage. He improved as a defensive player. And I think with a lot of young players, especially at the guard position, learning how to play, defend against pick and rolls and pin downs, things of that nature, they struggle. And he did, you know, early on, but he improved as the year went on. He also showed that he could, when the defense concentrates on stopping him, that he could make plays for others. And, you know, the last game that we played, we got knocked out of the playoffs in the first round by the Raptors G League team. You know, he scored 30 points. They were double teaming him, you know, to get him off the ball. And, you know, he was playing against some good players, you know, Gary Payton II, who's playing with the Warriors now, Nick Stauskas, Henry Ellenson, Alize Johnson, all these guys that are in the NBA right now, Malachi Flynn, you know, were on the opposing team. And he was able to, you know, in a playoff setting, score 30, you know, giving us a chance against some pretty, you know, high level players. And so I just think that he has it, and he has the work ethic to go along with it.
You see this effortless scoring. It's not hard to project him being a 25 point a night scorer in the NBA. You couple that with this explosive athletic ability that he has, and as you say, that sort of mentality, that killer mentality, that he's going to go out, that he's fearless. What does he need to work on to become a superstar? Because I think everybody knows the talent level is extremely high here. What is he going to have to do to become a star in the NBA?
Well, I think that it's inevitable that he will become a star. I mean, you know, one of the things, like I just mentioned, defensively, and that, you know, with all these guys, like obviously he's slender, so he's going to have to get stronger. Now he's strong, he's wiry strong, but you know, he's going to have to get stronger because there's going to be monsters at that position that he plays night in and night out, that he's going to have to be able to defend. And with most young players, coaches put you on the floor. If you're not defending, they're not going to have you out there on the floor. So continuing to grow in that area, especially in the pick and roll game, he has a high basketball IQ, you know, so I'm not worried about that. And then just continuing to be selective in terms of the type of shots that he takes, so that he can shoot a high percentage, because he can score from every level, from three. He can attack the basket and finish over and through contact. He can post up. You know, he's a good free throw shooter. And so, you know, offensively, he checks all the boxes. He can play make for other people, you know, if need be. But I would say just defensively, just continuing to get stronger, and to be able to negotiate how to play against, you know, in pick and roll settings, and against high level scorers that are coming off of pin downs and things of that nature.
All right, that's a pretty stellar review from your head coach right now. Let's move to Jonathan Kuminga, who I have just one spot lower, number 5 on the board, a year younger than Jalen Green. He reclassifies, comes to the G League. And I think for a lot of NBA scouts, they'd seen less of Kuminga than they'd seen of Jalen Green. So a little bit more of a blank slate. Gets off to a really hot start. Ends the season, unfortunately, with some injuries. What do you see? What's the scouting report on him? I still think he has a potential to be a top five pick for sure, and maybe even the number one pick in the draft. It's a little bit more projection with him. He's maybe not quite as far along as Jalen Green and a few others. But what's your scouting report on Jonathan Kuminga?
Well, I think that he's the most intriguing, probably the most intriguing prospect because, you know, he only came over to the States from the Congo, maybe 5 years ago. And so I don't think that he's been playing basketball as long as everybody else has. But from a talent standpoint and an athletic standpoint, he to me, from his physical stature, was the most NBA ready out of the guys that are in this class. And, having the body, having the athleticism, the strength, another player that can score. You know, when you watch him, it maybe doesn't look as smooth as Jalen on the offensive side, but he's efficient and he gets it done. And, you know, one of the areas that if he had to improve once again would be shot selection. But he can, you know, once again, score from all three levels, you know, from the three, driving to the basket, finishing through contact. He has a great post-up game, real good footwork, has to improve on his free throw shooting, be a little bit more consistent at the free throw line. But I think maybe the best two-way player in the draft. We put him, you know, constantly during the season on whoever the head of the snake was for the opposing teams, regardless of position. So if we wanted to shut down the opposition's point guard, we could put him on it. He could switch on the bigger guys and be able to hold his ground. And so that's the part, you know, in terms of he reminds me a lot of, I got to see and work out Jaylen Brown a little bit before he entered the draft when he was coming out of Cal. Same kind of body type and athleticism. Kuminga's a little bigger. He's, you know, about 6'8". But, you know, you can see where, you know, Jaylen Brown went third in the draft the year he got drafted, and you can see what kind of player he turned into. And I think that Kuminga, that's probably the closest comparison that I would have in terms of what type of player he'll project to be based on what I've seen so far this year.
You talked a little bit about the free throw shooting, shot selection. What else does he need to work on to, again, be an elite NBA player?
I think the biggest thing probably is just continuing to get more experience. Just, you know, because like I said, he hasn't played as long as everybody else has played. And really increase his film study so that he can become more familiar with the terminology and the NBA sets and things of that nature. Because right now, what he's doing, which has been pretty incredible, is just off of raw talent. And so once I think he becomes more knowledgeable or more of a student of the game in terms of just studying, his opponents, looking at film of himself, you know, so that he can continue to grow and not make the same mistakes and understand like what's a good shot, what's not a good shot. And that's hard to balance too, because he is so strong and he is so good that he can make a lot of tough shots. But, you know, going up to the next level, no coach is going to turn the ball over to him and say, you know, you're the man as a rookie and, you know, lead our team. So he's going to have to play, as will all of them, learn how to play a role and do that well and do the things that you know that are important to a successful team when you don't have the ball in your hand. And so just I would say learning how to, you know, continuing to grow in the areas of what you're doing when you don't have the ball in your hand, which is, you know, a lot of it is about 80% of the time. that you don't have the ball in your hand. And so, but with that being said, with that being said, he came in, he's only 18 years old. I don't think he turns 19 until October. You know, and so he's the youngest guy that was on our team, but maybe physically just the most impressive out of everybody that we had.